Great to have you with us for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. And if you've ever had a question about orchids, just a general question, or maybe about raising them, or what's wrong with your orchids, or how do you get, what orchids would our guest recommend, now is the time to ask. You got about an hour to do it here with our guest, Chuck Aker. Chuck's a breeder of Phragmopedium orchids and produces new hybrids, and he sells them to commercial growers as well as home hobbyists. And his business is called Flasks by Chuck. And as we talk with Chuck, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about orchids? Always love to hear from you. We're going to be talking about Orchid Quest as well. That's the biggest orchid sale, I think, in the Midwest at the least, maybe in the whole country. Give a question with your questions and comments. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can email to talk@wpr.org, 1-800-642-1234, email to talk@wpr.org. Chuck Aker, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you, Larry. It's always good to be on with you and your listeners.
Tell you what, we've got callers already lining up with some questions, and I think I'm just going to go to Ruth in Chippewa Falls. Ruth, what's on your mind?
Oh, I have a orchid that has leaves that are turning purple.
The leaves are turning. What? Go ahead, Chuck.
Well, yeah, that's not terribly common, but I do believe when that happens, it's a reaction to generally excessive levels of light. And sometimes that can also come from if you switched over to some different kind of artificial light, that certain LED lights produce, different wavelengths of light, of course, and sometimes that can have an effect. Is it in a naturally lit area, or are you under lights with that plant?
It's naturally lit, and it's been in the same place for a long time. The only thing I did different is change the soil.
Okay. Well, is the soil that you changed it to something that's recommended for orchids, or what is it that you planted it in?
It said it was for orchids, but to me, that didn't look like orchid food. I mean, orchid soil.
Yeah, there's some really different things being sold out there for orchid potting mixes. You kind of got to be careful, and it does have a little bit to do with how the plant's going to pick up some of the nutrition and so on. So that could be part of the issue as well. Just to throw this out there at Orchid Quest, this is going to be one of the first years at our sale and show that we're going to be selling a custom-made blend of orchid mix that we use in production for orchids as well as most of us use for hobby growing. So you can obtain some packages of that there, and I would highly recommend to switch over to that type of media.
Yeah, there you go, Ruth, and Orchid Quest, there it is, February 1st and 2nd, right?
Yes, Saturday, February 1st, 10 to 5, Sundays, the February 2nd, 10 to 3, Monona Convention Center. This is the first year that we're there, and we're terribly excited to be in there with the beautiful space and natural light, so really excited for that.
And if you've never been to the Monona Terrace Community Center right downtown Madison, they're right on the lake, Lake Monona. It's that in and of itself is worth the trip, let alone all the orchids. Yeah. Kay in Madison has a question for you. Hi, Kay.
Yes, good afternoon. Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I grew up in Madison, but lived in New York City for 40 years. And so I put three quick things. Juicy historical fact, the orchid wars of the 19th century, like in the Amazon, where guys were shooting each other trying to find new orchids. Number two, if you could make events more accessible to sight disabled people like me, I'd be willing to certainly feel flowers and smell them if we could be kept in mind. And thirdly, one of the two best things in New York City is their annual train and botanical garden show in the Bronx Botanical Garden. It's fabulous. Between Christmas and New Year's.
Yep.
Oh, good. Yes. Well, we'll definitely take all those things into consideration. Indeed. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. The orchid wars of the 19th century. I don't have a lot of information on that.
Yeah, there's definitely been some stories of that, and back in those early days of collecting, and some pretty terrible things have gone on, of course, and that wasn't just in the plant family or orchid plant family either. So there's some really interesting books out there, one of which called Orchid Muse, and Erica Hanel is the author, and she actually spoke to our club at one of our meetings, I believe it was last November. This book has a lot of history in it about that type of thing, and you may want to pick that up and take a read on that one, Orchid Muse.
And as far as events, your event came with some site issues. I think your event is certainly, I'm pretty sure it's set up so that someone with that kind of an issue would still be able to come and enjoy the event.
Yes, I do believe. I mean, we don't, you know, really allow anybody to get terribly close or hands-on with the orchid exhibits that are put on. But, you know, for the sales tables and things like that, our vendors are more than accommodating for those types of things. So absolutely. And of course, you know, Monona Terrace is you know, accepting, you know, all kinds of levels of that. So I'd highly recommend to give it a whirl.
Yeah. And the book you mentioned, Orchid Muse?
Orchid Muse, yeah.
Yeah. We had the author on the show October 18th.
Okay.
And so, Kay, and you or anybody else for that matter, you could go back, go to WPR.org/Larry, and go to, you could find that date, October 18th, I think it was, listen to it and give a listen. It would have been probably an hour or half hour, 1 hour interview with the author of that book. So WPR.org/Larry, go to October 18th, and you're going to find that that show, and you can listen to the book that Chuck just recommended. There you go.
Yeah, beautiful.
Marion Appleton has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have an ice cube orchid that I got from Walgreens for my mom like 5 years ago. It has never been repotted. And the material, the soil material has pretty much broken down. So it's kind of leaning. So I know it needs to be repotted, but it is just, it has a lot of what I believe are called aerial roots, and I'm not sure how to handle them with repotting.
Okay. Well, you got a great candidate there for sure. To start with, I would highly recommend purchasing, you know, a reputable orchid growing mix, such as what we're going to be selling at Orchid Quest next weekend. A custom-made mix for growing orchids in our climate here, which we all basically use for our hobby and for commercial production as well. And then taking those aerial roots, you try to get as many of those, you know, back into the pot as you can, and you may have to upgrade your pot size a little bit to do that. As you're working with those roots, you're going to hear some cracking and crunching, and some of them are going to, you know, possibly break. But if they don't physically break in half, you hear these cracking and crunches, they're still good. You know, don't be alarmed with that noise. And then it also is recommended to soften those roots with some water if you can prior to working with it. Mist it heavily or run it under the sink or whatever, and let those roots soak up some moisture. They become much more pliable and flexible after they have been soaked for or watered and allowed to be wet for about an hour or so. You don't necessarily have to soak the whole thing, but give it a good drink and let those roots soften up a little bit, and then you can work with it. Get as many of those roots back into the pot as you possibly can, and then start adding in your growing mix slowly, handful at a time, and, you know, shake it around a little bit, pack it a little bit. You'll see it falling in between the root crevasses and so on. So repotting, you have a Phalaenopsis orchid there, and that's what they generally call the ice cube orchid. And we don't really recommend watering them with ice cubes, but it's a successful endeavor for a lot of people. But they're really common plants. They bloom a long time, and they're one of the easiest orchids to grow and maintain in the house, and also one of the easiest orchids to repot if you're a novice. So,
yeah, Mary, does that help?
That is fantastic. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Is that the most common orchid that the most popular orchid that is sold today?
It is, and it's because they are most conducively grown in the average home. You know, they don't require too much of a special condition at all. They live in comfortable temperatures that we do, you know, anywhere from 60 to 80. They generally do well in an east, west, or a south window. They grow well under artificial lights. They're very similar in growing to African violets, and a lot of people raise African violets around this part. They're also very long bloomers. I mean, the Phalaenopsis orchid can bloom anywhere from 2 to 4 months. They'll also bloom twice a year if you know how to cut the stem off in the right place, and there's information about that on the Orchid Growers Guild website, where we have our culture sheets. So they definitely are the most popular. And then I think the second most popular now becoming in the mainstream are the Oncidium orchids, and they just come in a barrage of different colors and shapes and sizes, becoming a bit more grower-friendly through hybridizing efforts. And you've got fragrance involved with that particular genera, as you don't with Phalaenopsis. So they're really good plants to have, too, and you'll see just tons of this kind of stuff at Orchid Quest.
Yeah, and we're going to talk some more about Orchid Quest with our guest, Chuck Aker, breeder of Phragmopedium orchids, produces new hybrids for sale to commercial growers and home hobbyists. Our guest today, and you can join in with your question. Maybe it's about Orchid Quest. Maybe it's just about orchids in general or your specific orchid. Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Larry Mueller here for Garden Talk, and next week on Garden Talk shows, we'll be taking a look at garden trends for 2025. We'll talk to the father of straw bale gardening, Joel Karsten, and we'll take a closer look at ferns. So kind of three topics next for the next Garden Talk show. Right now, though, we're talking Orchid Quest, orchids, anything you want to know about orchids, as a matter of fact. But we want to zero in a bit on Orchid Quest today because that's coming up February 1st and 2nd. And Chuck Aker, our guest today, great to have him back. And certainly, again, you can join us at 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. And let's take a minute to, before we get to Tom in Green Bay with a question, Orchid Quest, I said it's February 1st and 2nd at a new place this year. It's at Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center on John Nolan Drive. So a new site for you, and it should be a lot of fun.
Yes, we are terribly excited to be in this venue with the natural light and more space, which we definitely need. Orchid Quest is getting increasingly more popular every year around the area here. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to it. And it's Saturday, our hours are 10 to 5. We'll be opening up, you know, taking tickets at the door a little earlier than that. Sunday, it's 10 to 3, so there's a plenty of time to get in. Adults $10, students $7, children under 5 are free, and parking is right there at Monona Terrace for only $5 a day. And of course, there's nearby parking in the ramps and on the street as well. This is definitely one of the largest orchid shows in the upper Midwest, and it's just right here in Madison. So we're very fortunate to be able to put on this event. And we've worked very hard at, you know, getting this venue. And again, we're really excited. We've got just about 20 different commercial orchid plant growers and supply vendors from across the country, and some even actually from overseas coming this year. So there'll be a whole plethora of different things. We have 5 different orchid societies coming from various places in the upper Midwest, and these vendors and societies will be putting on exhibits, and they'll be bringing some of their finest plants in the collections set up in these gorgeous displays. And we, again, have a nice space at the convention center now to spread out and with the natural light. These displays are then judged on a national level by the American Orchid Society and awarded prizes at many different levels for flower quality and plant quality, the arrangement of the exhibit, and so on. So that's really exciting. We also have got raffles and a silent auction that takes place both days. And I'll just mention that there is one very exciting piece of jewelry that has been donated to our club for this auction that is going to really, really stir some interest if you're into that. We've got the free plant check. So if you get some plants in your arms and you've got to unload, you take them over to the plant check and they'll watch your plants for the rest of your shopping experience. And something new that we started last year, we have what's called the Orchid Ambassadors. Myself and another gentleman will be in the exhibit room to answer questions and talk to people about orchids and anything that they may want to know about some of these exhibits and how this works. We've got some free educational lectures and demonstrations put on by our club members both Saturday and Sunday, and I'll run through that schedule briefly. We have at 11 o'clock, the first one on Saturday is Principles of Orchid Growing, put on by our own member of the Orchid Growers Guild, Professor Ken Cameron. He is the professor of botany and also the director of the Wisconsin State Herbarium, and we are very proud and excited to have him as a guild member. And his presentations are just excellent to listen to, very educational and entertaining. Ken is amazing. At 12 o'clock, I go on with an open forum, kind of a question and answer type of thing, which I very much enjoy, similar to what I'm doing on this show. And that always brings in a lot of interest. At 1 o'clock, we have a repotting demonstration put on by Terry Joswiak, who is the chair of our Orchid Quest show. She has done an amazing job working this up, and she'll be doing some hands-on potting demonstrations and also be mentioning that we do have a custom-made orchid bark mix for sale at our show this year. And then at 2 o'clock, we have an open panel discussion with 3 members of the Orchid Growers Guild, and collectively, they've got about 60-plus years of orchid growing experience as well, so that's kind of a fun thing to sit in and just talk orchids. And then on Sunday, Ken comes back on again at 11 with his Principles of Orchid Growing. Highly recommend it if you missed it Saturday. And then again, 12 o'clock, I do my question and answer thing. And then at 1 o'clock, we've got Scott Weber. Scott is a longtime Orchid Grower Guild member as well, and he puts on a beautiful presentation, Native Wisconsin Orchids. And he is like the foremost expert in our native Wisconsin orchid species here. Really nice slideshow. I highly recommend to see that. And a lot of people don't know that we've got 40-some species of orchids native to Wisconsin, so he's got a really, really great program. And then at 2 o'clock on Sunday will be the last one. We have Repot What You Bought, and put on by the president of our club, Sue Reed. And she does a really great job at presenting her knowledge as well. So, and she'll be talking again about having our bark mix for sale. And there's a lot more information on our website at orchidgrowersguild.org. And you click on the Orchid Quest tab, and all that information is there again for you.
And I got to tell you, I was a winner in the silent auction last year. I got myself a hand-painted plate that I won in the silent auction.
Yeah.
And it's sitting, it's got a nice prominent place in my living area at home. So that was a lot of fun for me. Well, we got lots of callers online. We'll talk some more about Orchid Quest as we go along here. But Tom in Green Bay's got an orchid question for you. Let's go there. Tom, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if I have more than one. We were given this orchid, and I'm wondering if I have more than one orchid in the pot, because over the years we've had this thing, and it usually blooms lavender, but it has been lavender and white, and once it was yellow. Is that common for them to change color?
Well, in some cases, there's been the case where the Phalaenopsis orchid has been sold as a dyed color. So when you purchase it, it's one color, and then when it reflowers, it's going to be another color because that dye doesn't stay with the plant in its rebloom. It's possible that you got something like that going on, because if you did buy it and it was a lavenderish, you know, bluish lavender color, and that went to white, that's telltale sign right there. It was probably one of the dyed ones. And then when you say it bloomed kind of yellow, sometimes they'll just go in a little off pigment of white, you know, from that color. So that more than likely that's what you got there. Nevertheless, the thing is blooming. So kudos for that. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely. There you go, Tom. Interesting. I didn't know how do they dye them?
Yeah, it's a proprietary process that, no one really knows how this comes, so they keep that a secret. But you've seen the blue Phalaenopsis out there,
and
I think I've actually seen some red now. It's not really a great red, but they're calling it red. And so the colors that aren't natural in the Phalaenopsis family, they're dyeing these things, and it's probably some, you know, material they inject into the inflorescence, into the flower stem as it's developing, that comes through in those blooms as they develop. But and they typically will reflower with what color that plant was originally, and they usually use the white Phalaenopsis because that's the one that's going to take on the best pigmentation of the dye.
So. Yeah, that makes sense. Tom, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. John in Hollister, we'll go to you now. Hi, John.
Hey, I have a question about how to approach people who are digging up our wild population of pink lady slippers. They're not rare, but they are in steep decline, and I try and encourage people not to dig them up, and a lot of people get really angry and don't tell me what to do type thing. And the DNR warden told me there's nothing he can do because they don't have any specific protections. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not an expert in the native orchid category at all, and that would be something that Scott Weber could certainly address. But to the best of my knowledge, I don't believe that is legal either way. I mean, these are naturally occurring species, and I believe that the slipper orchid family, which this falls into, is protected. Don't quote me on that. Again, I'm not an expert in that field. I'm a tropical orchid expert, but that's definitely not cool. I appreciate you going out there and telling them to, you know, hold off on that. And I know that people just kind of disregard those types of comments, but there's probably somebody out there way better qualified than I am to direct you and give you information on that one.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just talked about, in the last segment of our show, the earlier segment of our show, I talked about lady slippers had been almost, had been considered extirpated from the UK. And somebody found a small batch and they're still there, and they got a bunch of people together to guard the patch so that people wouldn't take it. But here in Wisconsin, if you're on private property, or even if you're on state property, I would think that there'd be, you can't just go onto a state property and take whatever you want out of it.
Yeah, I do believe that is true. And again, Scott Weber is our foremost authority in that. And I'm sure Ken Cameron would also be able to shed a lot of light on that as well. If you wanted to come to our show and sit in on either one of those programs with these two gentlemen, you would definitely get a better answer for that.
Yeah, there you go, John. Hope you can make it to Orchid Quest. Linda in Minong will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Linda.
Thank you for taking my call. My question would be, you talked about a custom bark mix that you'll have for sale at this show. Can a person order that online and have it shipped?
You know, we might be able to make provisions with that through our website. This isn't something that we're set up to do right now, but that's a very good point, because it's so difficult to get a good quality of an orchid potting mix that's good for this part of our country. You know, you see the stuff that's sold by the big boxes and the mainstream names like Miracle-Gro and Schultz's and so on like that. Most of the ingredients in there is just not conducive for many orchids, period, much less growing in our climate here. Let me run that by some of our members that are more involved with the website and creating a store. But to be honest with you, I wouldn't hesitate. If you can reach out to me personally, I wouldn't hesitate to pack up a box for you and, you know, just take care of you right now, too. So you can find my information on my website is flasksbychuckacre.com, or just Google Chuck Acre. My name will come up, my website will come up, my email address and phone number is there. I'd be happy to help you out.
Yeah, and Chuck's last name is spelled A-C-K-E-R.
Correct. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, A-C-K-E-R, Chuck Acre. Linda, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Sounds like you might have some possibilities there with sales online.
Yeah. You know, that's just really, again, it's been very difficult to get a decent potting mix lately. And, you know, we've heard that for some years, and that's why a few of us in the club decided this is the year to do it. We purchased the raw ingredients, which is a very high-quality form of orchid bark. We mixed it with some horticultural charcoal, different grades of perlite. And then we sprinkle a little crushed oyster shell on there to neutralize the pH. We stir it up and bag it up. We have gallon bags for sale, and I believe they're going to be $15. And you can pot quite a few orchids with this gallon container. And of course, it's in a sealed up plastic container. You can keep it if you don't use it all. We're going to have three different grades of the bark size. So you're going to have the smaller bark size for seedlings and orchid varieties that like a little finer mix for their roots. And then we've got a medium, which is the most common. And then we've got a little coarser bark that we've mixed too. That's for, you know, things that have the real fat roots and larger pots and things like that. So we're really excited to give this a whirl and offer a decent product to our orchid growing community.
That's great. Linda, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 800-642-1234. The question about your orchid or maybe about Orchid Quest, give a call. 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Let's go to Janice in Antioch, Illinois next. Hi, Janice.
Hi, Larry. I was in Japan back in 65 to 67, and people that I lived with took me on a tour to an orchid place, and I have no recollection of what city or anything it was, but we started on the ground level and slowly worked our way up, walking around and upstairs and into different rooms, going higher and higher. And then even taking a cable car to the next mountain and going up higher. And each room was different kinds of orchids. And there were people, I don't know if this was overkill, but they had on their white medical coats and nets on their hair and masks on their faces. And so I don't know if they were hybridizing or what they were doing. but it was really interesting to see all of these orchids, different sizes and colors. And
yeah, it sounds wonderful, Janice, and sort of reminds us that orchids are on just about every continent. I think all but one, right?
Yeah, that's for sure. There's orchids found on every continent in the world except the Antarctica. And, yeah, it's the world's largest flowering plant family. And, of course, you've got things growing, you know, terrestrially in the ground at, you know, sea level, basically, all the way up to, you know, 10, 11, 12,000 foot elevation, you know, species. And, you know, that's why when she was saying they were taking her up, you know, higher and higher, of course, you know, the higher you get, the cooler it is. And you've got orchids that are growing in these very, very cold, cool climates, almost freezing in some cases. And, you know, they just thrive. So there's orchids for every climate, that is for sure.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Janice. I'm glad you enjoyed that trip. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, you know, I think there's 25 or 24, 25,000 species of orchids in the world?
Yeah, depending on how you look at them, we call them, if you're a lumper or a splitter. That means that some of these species have been, you know, subdivided a little bit. Like, you know, there's a variety of this species, and that's the, you know, basically the same species, but they split it into, you know, that gets really technical. But yeah, anywhere between 25,000 and 30,000 is kind of where we stand now. And then with all the hybridizing that goes on, I think there's close to a million different hybrids out now, and that number just continually grows. And there's a database for that with the Royal Horticultural Society in the UK, and they keep track of all these registered hybrids. And of course, you got to consider some of them that aren't registered with the Royal Horticultural Society that we often grow or see grow, and then two parents cross together but have not yet been registered in a name, so to speak. And so those would be unregistered ones. So, yeah, that it's just never ending.
And you're a breeder of Phragmopedium orchids, and you produce new hybrids for sale. This has got to be, well, I'm sure it's an interesting profession to have, and maybe a little painstaking.
Yeah, definitely. You know, from the time I make the pollination or make the cross, so to speak, you get the seed pod. That takes 4 to 5 months for the seed pod to mature. The seed pod is then harvested and sent off to a laboratory where it's then sewn on a sterile agar plate in a, what's called a flask. Flasks can be all kinds of different vessels, but this is a sterile closed vessel that's done under the laminar flow hood, so it's clean in there. There's no bacteria or fungi because that would destroy everything. Once the seed's germinated, there's anywhere from 6 months to a year in that process, and then they stay in the flask sometimes another year depending upon what type of orchid it is. From the flask up to a blooming size plant can take anywhere from 3 to 12 years depending upon the type of orchid. So when you look at an orchid sometime and, you know, it's $100 and some, you can rest assured that that was one of those that, you know, took some years to get to bloom from its seed or tissue culture. So that's a slow, painstaking process for sure, but very exciting when you make a hybrid and you get to see it bloom for the first time and this is brand new, you know, just no one's ever seen it before. That's what's really the rewarding part of it.
And you work with seeds. Which they're the small seeds. I think they're about the smallest seed in existence, aren't they?
Yes, orchid seed is very, very fine. It's much like dust in some cases. So yeah, it can be lost very easily when we do these hybrids and we watch these seed pods mature. And you know, often they'll split open before we actually get a chance to harvest them. And you know, we lose seed like that so easy. And yeah, very small seed, very painstaking process to develop that in the laboratory in the flask. It's not very fruitful. You get a lot of things that happen in the contamination or the seed isn't good, and there's all kinds of things that can go wrong.
Yeah. Verena emailed that since there are no ice cubes in nature, it seems that using 5 ice cubes a week on a pot is excessive. They heard that a friend's son, who is an orchid breeder, uses 1 ice cube, but they don't know how often. And you're not a fan of ice cubes necessarily, but I guess she's wondering about how many do you need in a week, and I suppose that depends on a lot of things.
Yeah, it does, yeah. There's the company that they started quite a while ago called JustAddIceOrchids.com, and they kind of took the guesswork out of how to water orchids, because that's really one of the things I think most people struggle with the most. So their formulation is their pot size, their pot shape, and their potting medium that they're using on these orchids, which is typically the Phalaenopsis orchid again, is all conducive and set up for this ice cube watering method. And I'm pretty sure they say put 3 ice cubes on it once a week, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a while since I've been around it. But, so that amount of water once a week has been, you know, scientifically proven to work with their product. And it's not a bad thing. I'm not a fan of it, no, because as one German orchid grower told me years and years ago, there's no ice in the jungle. You know, there's no ice cubes in the jungle. So we would always laugh about that. But, you know, if it works for them, hallelujah. It's the orchids are so diverse and can be grown under so many different conditions and in different ways that there's just no one way to do it. If it's working for you, stick with it.
Yeah. Well, typically watering a Phalaenopsis, if you're not going to use an ice cube, which you don't, how do you figure it out that way with just water?
Yeah, when they're growing in a bark-based mix, it's kind of difficult to diagnose whether it's dry or not, you know, especially if it's in an opaque pot. But you know, if it's in a clear pot, you can kind of see how much moisture is in there. A lot of times these are sold with these clear plastic pots nowadays. But one of the methods I always taught people back at the greenhouse was take a sharpened pencil or a wooden skewer or something of the sort, and just gently drive that into the core of that potting media, into the core of the pot there, and just, you know, let it sit for a few seconds or so, twist it around, whatever, pull it out. And you'll see, much like putting a toothpick in your mouth, how the wood has discolored with that moisture. And if you see that, you can rest assured that there's probably ample moisture there yet. And let it go. Orchids thrive really on the underwatering side versus the overwatering side. I rarely have seen an orchid in ill fate from being underwatered, and I always seen them in demise from being overwatered. And that's just the human tendency we have, is to overcare for stuff. If they're growing in the sphagnum moss type of growing media, which is becoming much more popular too, that's a little easier to diagnose, because you can actually just touch the surface of it and you'll be able to tell right away whether it's still wet or dry and could use a drink. It's very obvious with that stuff. So,
Chuck Aker, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Talking orchids today with Chuck Aker, a breeder of Phragmopelium orchids and produces hybrids for sale to commercial growers and home hobbyists, our guest. Always great to have Chuck come by talking about Orchid Quest on the show. He went through, it's February 1st and 2nd this year once again, and it's at the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center. And Annette in Green Bay has an orchid question, so let's go there. Hi, Annette.
Yes, good afternoon. Hi, Larry and Chuck. Maybe you could just go over what some of the you know, tried and true methods are to get a regular old Phalaenopsis to bloom. I've tried, you know, I have the right soil. I don't overwater. It's in a good location. Everything looks good. The leaves are beautiful. It's got lots of roots coming out. Now, the most recent attempt I've made is to keep it in a very cool location on a windowsill, you know, now in the winter time where it's been quite cool. So what am I doing wrong? Why doesn't it send out any blooms? It sends out lots of roots and the leaves are gorgeous.
It bloomed once and it's not blooming again, so it needs to be Yeah, rebloom.
Yeah. You're too good to your plant. That's probably what it is. No, you sound like you got everything perfect there, and what you just recently did was put it in a cooler, you know, area, which that is really the biggest thing with getting Phalaenopsis to initiate their bloom spike. You have to provide a cooler nighttime temperature after the leaves, after each new leaf has matured. So basically through it, growing season of the summer, your leaf is maturing or whatever, you get to the fall, early winter, that plant needs to experience a cooler climate. We always recommended to do what you just said. You put it closer to the window where it's getting the emitting cold. You can put it on the floor versus up on a table. Put it in a spare bedroom, shut the heat vent off, close the door, make sure it's still got some light. Those things are really important to get the Phalaenopsis to initiate its bloom spike. And once you see the bloom spike initiating and starting to grow up, whether just an inch long or less, you can then move that plant back to where you originally had it for your growing cycle and let the bloom spike develop as is. One of the other things that you can possibly try along with that temperature change is to stop feeding it what you're currently using, because you may be using a fertilizer that's a little higher in nitrogen, which is going to promote the growth, which is great for most of the year. But there is that time of the year where you want to kind of slow that growth and stimulate that plant to shoot up its bloom spike. And often you can go one of two methods. You can go with not fertilizing it at all, just using water, or using a bloom boosting type of fertilizer, which is the type of fertilizer that has the higher middle number. They always have three sets of numbers, like 30-10-10 or 20-20-20. You'd want to use something like maybe 10-30-10 or something that you can find where your middle number is higher, and that will help you as well. But I wouldn't be surprised if you're moving that plant to your cooler window area and you give it some time, you still have time to initiate that bloom spike with this cool climate.
Yeah. There you go, and that and again, that fertilizer, the higher phosphorus total is typically what gets the blooming going too.
Yes, and it also adds to the flower development, size, color, so on. Bloom, the inflorescence support, the stem structure, and stuff like that. So we recommended that a lot when we were in business.
Let's go to Deb. Let's see. Here's an email from Debbie, now raising an orchid. She was gifted a white orchid in July of last year and read about watering and when to cut flower stems. She recently saw a new leaf emerging. Does she need to repot it now? And does she replant in the same size container or a bit larger, and what about Jung's? Do they have the soil she needs? Not sure about that, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, Jung's is usually selling what's commonly known as the mainstream orchid potting mixes from Schultz's and Miracle-Gro and so on, which, you know, again, I don't highly recommend, but people use it at some level of success. And whether or not, you know, it needs repotting without seeing the plant, that's difficult to say. We usually recommend to repot Phalaenopsis orchids every year to 2 years. And that's not always because it's outgrowing its pot or anything, but to freshen up the potting media so it doesn't rot, because once that starts to rot, your roots are going to rot with it, and then you're going to have trouble. So we try to really avoid that and keep the media fresh and keep the root system happy. Tuck in any of those air roots that may have developed outside of the pot, get them back in so they can work their magic in the pot. So those are really the types of things, you know, it's hard to tell without seeing the plant.
Yeah, it makes some sense. Fertilizer, again, we talked a bit about fertilizer, and I'm wondering about reblooming. How often could you get an orchid to rebloom, Chuck?
Well, most orchids will flower once a year, and there's a lot of exceptions to that nowadays with the modern hybridizing. Just Phalaenopsis in general, because that's probably the most popular orchid growing, they will flower twice a year. So you get the main stem that comes up. It goes up, you know, and blooms out. You've got your flowers there.
The rule of thumb is to cut off only the portion of that stem that bore the flowers. So it's kind of hard to explain, but there's also information on our website, on the Orchid Growers Guild website, with pictures on how to do that. But basically, you're leaving like half the stem on the plant. And you see these little nodes that are on the stem, and out of the uppermost node, you're going to get a new bloom shoot coming out of that. And from the time you've cut it, it's usually about 60 days where you can see flowers again on the Phalaenopsis. They have a real high propensity of doing that. So a lot of people don't know that about them because they're not instructed to do that when they're bought, and there's no information typically on these plants. But, you know, and a lot of the other orchids are annual bloomers, but there again, there's more exceptions to that now with the modern hybridizing, and that's what it's all about.
Thinking about Orchid Quest now, which is coming up February 1st and 2nd, one of the things I excuse me, that I always enjoyed about it is just the aromas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You walk into that exhibit room, it's overwhelming in some cases, yes.
And the other nice thing is that there's plenty of opportunities to purchase there.
Yes. Again, we've got close to 20 different vendors, and some of them are just selling supplies as well. But, there's a plethora of orchids to be had there. And we even have the vendor coming from overseas this year, which brings in, plants that are basically bare root, and you can plant them yourself, but they're at a very, very low cost. And there's some really interesting things that you don't normally see from a lot of the commercial growers in the U.S. But yeah, there's just an overwhelming variety of stuff to choose from. It's like I said, the world's largest flowering plant family, and there's just no end to the new hybrids being created. And we bring out the best of the best for our exhibits too. And a lot of times you can see some of those plants for sale on the vendors' tables that you've seen in an exhibit, which is really exciting. So it gives you a chance to get some of these higher-end materials as well.
And I like the way that you care for those. You know, I've purchased many times there, and I've never had a trouble, you know, with a plant freezing or anything on the way home because of the way they're packaged.
Yeah, we're really adamant about instructing our vendors, and they've been around too. You know, they've gone to shows. Some of these vendors, this is their livelihood. They don't have a retail business. They just go to shows all over the Midwest all winter, and, you know, we're all very versed at that. And, you know, when it's really, really cold, I remember years ago at the Alliance Center, 20 below, you know, we would physically go to the door and hold the plant for the person and tell them to drive up and, you know, warm your car up for a while. And we'd run out and, you know, pass the plant to them real quick just to make sure that they were getting their plants home in a safe manner. So we're very concerned about that. And extended forecast for next weekend looks pretty good. So fingers crossed on that.
It does indeed. And Chuck, it's always a pleasure to have you on and to talk. And I hope we can do this again down the road. Thank you so much for being with us and for telling us about orchids and Orchid Quest. Appreciate it very
much. Absolutely. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah. Chuck Aker, our guest today, he breeds Phragmopedium orchids, produces new hybrids for sale to commercial growers and to hobbyists as well. And Flasks by Chuck is his site. And you'll see him at Orchid Quest. He's one of the featured speakers there at Orchid Quest. So great to have him with us as well. And thank you so much for listening in and joining us today. This and all of our shows are a team effort. Our producers, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnaud, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and I hope you'll stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News. Thanks for listening to Garden Talk.